Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm playing an interview I did with the exuberant, ebullient, energetic, passionate, delightful, funny, tap dancing, acting, singing writer, Noah Racy. It's not to be missed. Hang on. Here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can.
Welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is about being all that you are. It's about recognizing that, unfortunately, many of us have been forced to hide, to use the clinical term, deny, aspects of ourselves. And so we come into adulthood without access to some of the parts of ourselves that we could really use. I talk about this in every show, and I'm not going to talk that much about it in this show, because the other thing I do with the show is I play interviews that I did with people who make their living or their life with an art, because it's so difficult to do that in our culture, that these people, at least in the aspect of their work, are just who they are. And you hear that in all of these interviews. And the interview I'm doing today with Noah Racy is very long, and I didn't want to cut any more than I needed to. So I'm not going to talk very much about how you can learn what you might have hidden, how you can surface that. But I do talk about that in other shows, and you can go up on my website, thelynnshow.com. thelynnshow. Don't leave the E out of Lynn. And you could listen to other shows in which I talk more about that. Or you can listen to future shows where I will no doubt talk more about that. But now I really want to turn the rest of the show over to my interview with Noah. Noah Racy is someone who, to his very good fortune, discovered at three some things about himself that designed his life, that gave focus to his life. And riding the wave of what he discovered at three, he discovered so much more about himself and is still exploring all of the things that he can do and all of the amazing pleasure and joy that he gets from being who he is and doing what he can do. I don't want to say any more about it because Noah will say it for me. So here, the delightful Noah Racy. I am here with Noah Racy in my hotel room in Manhattan.
Oh, Lynn, this is, I don't know what it is.
So
it's
sudden.
It's very racy.
Oh, very nice.
See how I did that?
Yes. A bit that comes naturally and trippingly to your tongue.
I'm really funny.
You are funny.
I'm extraordinarily witty and funny.
And I can't wait.
All right,
so Noah was kind enough to run up here after rehearsal, and I want to talk about that in a little while. But first, I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. And I have reason to believe that this definition fits you.
Definitely.
Yeah. And the art would be?
The art would be storytelling, I think.
Storytelling.
I think that's what it comes down to. I mean, if I had to sum it up, theater, live theater,
yeah,
definitely would be the art.
Yeah.
That would be the medium.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So I only ask one question. And that is, how did it start? And I don't mean how did you get your first job. I mean, when was the very first moment in life that it occurred to you that you wanted to tell stories, or you wanted to be on stage, or you wanted to be seen or have an impact on people, or...
Well, that's all... Those are very coherent thoughts, like wanting to.
Yes, yes.
Wanting to.
Yeah.
It was before that. I would put it, wanted to be a part of... That's when it started, and it was a part of a drum circle.
And, really?
And that's when everything began as far as where I am now. Because what I do now is all rhythm.
Yes.
If it's words, if it's dance, if it's music, if it's silence, it's all rhythm. It's only rhythm. That's all there is. It's all timing. It's all respect for what came before to what comes next, and that's rhythm. Boom, and the next pulse sets up an expectation of how the pulse is going to be, and that's where words fall, and that's where movement falls, and that's where the whole spectrum of being on stage comes from.
Okay.
You start out and you try to establish truths, and then you try not to lie, and that's really, everybody's trying to do these storytellings out of that kind of vernacular, where you establish a world, and then you try to respect the world you established to tell a story. So yeah, it would be when I was probably three. My dad got me a snare drum, and
do you know why?
He was a drummer in the military.
Oh.
He bought me a drum, and as the story goes, he said that within the first week, I was playing an entire John Philip Sousa album. That he said, and of course he's my dad, he's, you know, I'm sure there were messes, and, you know, mistakes here and there, but he said that I jumped to this idea of rhythm right off the bat.
Right. So you listened to the album or the record or the, and you played along?
I played along, yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Played along well.
Right.
On
in time is essentially
what
he's saying.
What he's saying,
right.
Yep.
Right.
And as you watch kids who pick up foreign languages, and you watch, you know, if it's taught at the right time, kids are just sponges. They're amazing how fast they pick up. So that was the beginning of the expression. Then it was a drum circle where being, I was the kid who could drum as far as my dad and his friends, there was drum circles. And
Have a drum circle?
Mm-hmm. I grew up around that kind of energy in the West.
So now they would get together periodically, mm-hmm, and play rhythms?
Yep.
Right?
And
you sat in?
I sat in. I would sit, I would sit behind this big conga and start playing. And
6 years old? Seven,
oh, yeah. Eight. Yeah, five, six, seven.
Right.
Yeah, right around
so
then.
You fell in love with this drum?
Yeah, I fell in love with drumming. I fell in love with being a part of communal, yeah, creation, communal expression.
Yes, and there is something very hypnotic about a drum circle.
Oh yeah, yeah, very much.
You just
very much. You can lose yourself.
You lose yourself,
you lose,
right?
Yourself,
exactly.
And you give yourself over to, and you find ebb and flow. You find respect for other. You find
where you fit in.
Taking the attention. You find, yes, letting the attention go to someone else. And the propriety therein, where you realize as a kid, you look up and everyone's like, you've been soloing for a long time. You need to stop and let somebody else, you know, and you feel embarrassed and you realize, wow, there's a respect for each other. So I learned a lot in that kind of drum circle.
Yeah. How long did you do that?
Well, I'm still drumming. So, you know, I never really stopped. And I'm a tap dancer, which
it comes with the feet.
It's only rudiments. It's all rhythm.
That's right.
So I picked up tapping in high school. I picked up tapping from my drama director, now one of my dearest friends, Ruben Van Kempen, RubenVanKempen. And he runs the drama program in Seattle, Washington, Roosevelt High School. And when I was in Thoroughly Modern Millie, there were three kids in three Tony-nominated Broadway shows that year. Chad Kimball, who's the star of Memphis, came from my high school. This man is an amazing force of nature as far as cultivating students and finding kids who want to express themselves. So I got into tap dancing there and musical theater, just fell into it. I didn't have any idea what I was doing. But it all began with rhythm. Yeah, it all began with that sense of rhythm.
Well, and forgive me, but you don't think there was something about identifying with your dad, the drummer?
Mm. Oh, definitely. It was being a part of the men.
Yes.
It was being a kid, but showing up among men. And
yes.
That was really important to me.
Yeah.
Like only a boy can, you want to be acknowledged by the men, by the elders.
And you remember that?
Oh, totally, totally. I felt I was so proud of what I could do with them. You know, I was, which made the embarrassment when I would do it wrong all the more poignant and
powerful as a lesson.
Very.
Right.
Very. There was humility that I try to remember. You definitely, you learn where you've overstepped your bounds. You learn where you're taking the attention for too long. And
yeah, there's a protocol.
And it's the jazz musician's protocol. It's a respect for the performer that's performing with you, that's creating with you. And I came into jazz kind of through, standards and tap dancing. Because tap came up, tap was developed in America with all these different influences, Irish step dancing, flamenco, African rhythms, all of that became American tap dancing, which is why it's an American art form. So tap and jazz came up in the same roadhouses, juke joints, etc., coming out of Louisiana, coming from the South and coming up. It is that same, how about this? Oh yeah, I'm going to better you. Even better than you got.
Right.
It's always in the challenging and the mutual admiration kind of
thing. And it's trading force.
Trading fourths, trading eights, trading...
Yes, right, trading whatever,
it's,
right.
Yeah, it's going back and forth.
And it's trading. Right, it's trading.
Giving
right.
and taking.
Right,
yeah.
Giving and taking.
Yeah. Tap dancers, I love my dear family so much. It's an amazing group of people who are, as my buddy Chris Irk said, he was like, you know, tap dancing just might be the coolest thing in the world. And it really is so simple, but the minute you put on a pair of shoes and you get on stage, it's unfair. It's unfair. You do a time step, and nobody can watch it without smiling.
I know.
Because it's what we all want to do. We all want to hop around, and we all want to make a noise. We want to make a joyful noise. So
it's not only that. It's not only that. It's that we all want to be, we all want to do that with grace.
Right.
You know, that like, as though it's easy, as though you're flying, as though,
right.
You know, that's the thing. It's
we all want to be able to communicate as clearly as musician tap dancers do,
yes.
Where they do a rhythm and they tell you, is an idea, it's a phrase, you're saying something. And if they understand that, I remember listening to Savion say that in an interview when he was younger, when I was much younger, but listening to him talk about passing, saying a sentence to somebody, you know, and that you can say it and have them understand it.
It's very much like jazz music.
Oh, yeah, it is. It's coming away from the keys, away from a saxophone, and just doing the rudiments on your feet.
Right.
And the same as drumming. Yeah, it's amazing. It's an amazing group of people.
Well, you know, I've never actually heard anybody talk. Well, I heard Jeff talk a little bit about dancing, but not like this. Not with the sense of community that you're talking about, the camaraderie, the feeling of being a part of something. And it's really what you said in the beginning, that's what captured you in the beginning, was being a part of something.
Being a part of,
right.
Having an identity and connecting to the people around me.
Yes.
It was important. It was an important moment for me, definitely, as a growing up kid, as far as... And then when I found theater, I had the same kind of reaction, because I was a drummer in band. you know, I always played the snare drum in band at Roosevelt, and then it was I felt like I had something, but when I found theater, I felt like I took another step in. I really felt like I belonged. I found something. It was a new re-upping. It was a new wow.
Hello.
All this hyperactivity, energy. I was a blithering idiot. I was just a big ball of energy, and I was most hyperactive in school. I was, you know, I blinked just excessively. I had vocal tics. I had all this emotion just flowing through me, and when I found dance and theater, it gave me a way to focus it. And pow, I got my first 3-point grade average, and you know, I just clicked into something that made sense. So
where do you think all that energy came from? Do you know? I mean, have you ever ask yourself?
Ask any kid that's on Ritalin right now where the energy comes from.
Were you on Ritalin?
No. My mom wouldn't do it.
No. Good.
No, exactly. But
good for her.
It's natural. Kids have energy. All get massively political, and you don't have to put it in, but it's a big deal for me.
Well, I agree. When I was in kindergarten, I think the first grade, the teacher called my mother in and said, you know, we can't keep her in her seat. She's at everybody else's desk trying to figure out what everybody else is doing, you know? And I'm quite sure that, you know...
Look at you. You're on my desk right now figuring out what I'm doing.
Of course. It's right.
You turned it into a career.
That's right.
It's brilliant. See?
Right.
Why can't they tap into that?
Why can't they? And, you know, 20 years later, I'd have been on Ritalin.
Right.
And so I know. I mean, this is the converted, you know, that you're preaching to here.
It's insane. Yeah, and I know I'm not. I can tell them right away I'm not preaching. It's such a...
Well, okay, so what we had here was an extremely passionate, energetic, there's another word I want, I can't find it, young man, little boy, who finds first the drum to pour all this into, and then the theater to pour all this into, right? And so essentially it's what you said, you know, I was able to do this, what you were able to do,
right.
Is you were able to find the place where that all worked for you. And
follow my bliss.
Exactly. And contribute to the universe with what you actually have to give.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm so grateful.
Yeah, well, and so is everybody else who knows you. And I know a lot of people who know you, so I know.
Right on.
Well, okay. So, we're in high school now.
Yes.
And you've discovered drama, you've discovered theater, and so did you fall in love with acting?
I started out acting. Started out skipping class to go take acting. being in acting class with friends who were already in it. And then it coincided with auditioning for the musical. I was humming in a class, and the teacher was like, go audition for the musical. Me and a friend were humming together, like doing some kind of harmony stuff, and the teacher said, go audition for the musical. And I said, okay, what's a musical? She said, go down to the gym and...
Show up.
Yeah, talk to this little balding Asian man, God bless him, Ruben Van Kempen, Dutch Indonesian. And I walked down there, Ruben's given the audition, and I auditioned for, it was Oklahoma, and got in, got called back for a bunch of leads. I didn't know what I was doing. I ended up in the chorus, and then just got into drama from there. I was sophomore, junior, senior year, was just drama, all the way.
Mostly through. Musicals?
Musicals, and straight plays, yeah, I've done both, yeah.
Do you have a preference?
Well, you know, now I yearn for straight plays because... I and the world found my feet, and it's dancers get. I don't want to say cursed because it is my path, but you get the challenge of once you are discovered for, once you have this dancing ability and people want to see that, making a living is not a horrible thing. I think you understand that being an artist and making a living is really really nice, and so. I also looked at my youth as this is it. This is my time to dance. This is my time to really throw myself in. So it's always kind of a case of like what I'm not doing, that I'm, oh man, it'd be great to do a straight play. Oh, it'd be great to do a musical. Oh, it'd be, you know, what, the grass is always greener. But I try to be really careful as I tiptoe through this subject, because I think that everything I say is kind of a little prayer. And I don't want to shut down the idea that I'm doing one or the other, that I'm doing whatever I can. And I'm open to, I'm directing and choreographing right now, and I'm acting, and I'm dancing. I'm doing it. And it's just such a joy. Working with David Hyde Pierce, you know, from Frasier.
Yes.
Who's become a friend, and I've gotten to work with him on projects. Watching him work on Curtains, and listening, realizing that he's just a man who does theater and does film and TV, but he just does performing. And when he's on stage,
he's
a performer.
Right.
He's not a singer. He's not a dancer. He's not an actor. He is a performer, and he does all three. And he doesn't go, oh, I'm not this, oh, I'm not that. Of course he's not Baryshnikov. Of course he's not Pavarotti. But the man can sing beautifully. And he and good people around him taught himself how to dance. And he dances beautifully.
He taught himself how to dance?
He worked so hard on in Spamalot and then with Rob Ashford in Curtains. And he became a really, really great dancer. And he found his body. He found how to, you know, how he moves. And he just showed me that we do one thing. And then there are a lot of excuses that you put around it, like, well, I don't do this really well, or I don't do this really well, or I'm not this kind of thing, or I'm, you know, and that's just ego flipping out. He's a live entertainer.
Actually, it's insecurity.
Yeah, it is. We want to show up the best we can, so we think if we...
I'm apprehensive that this won't look so good.
So I better...
I love what you just did. Did you know that you did this? It's like the turtle, right? You stuck your head right in the... No, I'm not
gonna... You're going to put that in. You call me a turtle. No, it really is. It's people like him and Bill Irwin, you know, the amazing performer, who was a clown and then won a Tony for acting. You know, he's a performer. He is a storyteller with his body, with his voice. And I tell a lot of students that when they're asking me about going to college or being in a conservatory program, or what should they do? And I say, you got 50% of the information comes from your mouth. And 50% comes through your body. So you tell me what you want to do. You want to not learn how to sing? That would be insane. You want to not learn how to dance? You're insane. That's ridiculous. You know, develop these abilities, this craft. Develop this ability to use your voice correctly, to use your body correctly, and then give everything you have to the director. And, you know, that's what we want as directors and choreographers. We want people who can give us everything.
Yes.
If I want you to... do a backspin, a break dance, and you can do it right on. If I want you to sing a high and sing a low and, you know, shout loud every day, eight times a week, and you can do it, that's it. That's funny.
I'm hung up here on the definition of performer. When you said it first, I thought you meant, and you've been talking about it a little bit, the capacity to develop every aspect that you can, right?
Yeah.
Is there something underneath that which says, I want to influence an audience, or I want to tell a story, or I want to be, I want to have an impact, or, and I use all these other things in order to service that need? Do you know what I'm asking?
Sometimes, yeah. Yeah. I mean... I think I can work myself up into a state where that's what I concentrate on. I can think about the nobility of being a soul toucher, you know, like I can really touch people's souls. I lighten people's hearts. I lift them up and I send them out in a different state. That's massively, wow, that's amazing. I could connect that to developing the craft. I want, or, you know, I can connect it to how good it feels to work with the craft, and I want more of that, and I want to keep doing. So it's I can tie it all together in different knots, you know.
Yeah, I see.
It's it can get kind of egotistical when you get into, I touch people's souls, and I am the vehicle for, and, you know, I have these, and, you know.
I don't think that is in any way... what you mean when you say egotistical. I don't think that's in any way... I don't think there's a negative to that.
Oh, there can be.
How can there be?
Oh, it's a massively powerful thing.
Well, yeah, but I mean... Massively powerful. No. I mean, how can there be a negative to have pride in the fact that you can do that?
No, I totally agree. to be proud of yourself and to feel good that you can do it.
Yeah.
No, totally.
No, there's
totally,
no.
Totally. If you're not careful, it can blow you into you thinking that you're the gift.
Oh, something else. Yes.
And
yes.
You're not.
No.
You are the servant of a gift.
You're the vehicle.
You're the vehicle for a gift to come through.
Yeah.
And if you get tucked up around yourself being the gift, and a lot of people do, and I'm not saying I don't. I have in my time been like come off the stage of doing a, you know, like a Bobby Child type role, just where you are this massive show. It is insanely bubbling in you. It's like a football game. You come off just pumped up and, oh my God, I can move mountains. And bring me all the meat and cheeses of the land. You know, you come off stage just amped up. And then you have people backstage or, you know, at the stage door just showering you with how much joy they got from it. It's a really tricky place to negotiate and keep yourself in center and realize they're in love with themselves right then. You
yes.
Showed them themselves, and it's not you that they're riding high from. It's you've awakened in them, their wishes, their hopes, their dreams, all these different things. So it's tricky.
It's an interesting balancing act.
Yeah, because we're all
you don't
20
wanna...
at some point. We're all right. 20 and arrogant at some. We have to be. We have to exercise that. I am the SHI, whatever. I am the top, you know, because you do that in your youth. So, yeah, it's a... It's an interesting thing. It's an
okay.
Interesting juggling.
So I have you still in high school. So
well,
then what happened?
I can't graduate yet.
Yes, no. Yeah.
Reuben Van Kempen happened to be in high school. My dear friend Reuben got me centered on doing this. And he said, if you want to, I could, you know, have you audition for conservatory programs. You could really do this. Like my second year of being
Whoa. Did you have other plans?
I didn't have any plans.
So you had no idea what you
were. I thought it was going to be Phil Collins, but taller. I was going to be a drummer who was going to be famous, right? That's all we think is I'm going to be famous.
But you did want to be famous.
Well, I like the idea that I could be this person who does this thing. And the only way we know about people who do these things are when they're famous. We don't hear about the not famous people. We hear about the famous people.
No, I understand that. But you did. You wanted to be known for
it. I didn't see my band teacher and say, I want to be the high school band teacher. I didn't have that. I had like, wow, I would like to be that person who can drum and, you know, sing. I definitely had an ego. I definitely had the thing that, you know, wanted to be up front. I'm not sure what was driving me, if it was need or if it was...
It's all right. You don't have to do that. I don't think there's anything pathological about it.
Right.
So I don't think you have to worry
about
it, okay?
Dig it. So he said, you can do this if you want to. If you put work into it, you can make this happen.
Wow.
And he really was the door. He really opened the door and said, how about this? And I stepped through. And I auditioned for the Boston Conservatory. And got accepted. And literally, I've always equated it to throwing darts in the dark. That's been my catchphrase. For a while there, I was like, dunk, and open my eyes and go, okay, well, I hit something. Let me try again. And I didn't know what I was doing. I was following my bliss.
Yeah.
I was elated that I had somebody to be. I was amazed at my own little gifts that were percolating and, you know, coming. It made sense. Rhythm, again, made sense to me. So I went to the Boston Conservatory. I went to the conservatory for 4 years of doubt, confusion. I was like, what am I doing? I don't know what the, you know, I was, it's an intense program. I was not sure if I wanted to, I knew I didn't want to do anything else, but I, you know, there's such intensity around these, all these kids who come from their high school programs and like, yes,
yes and they're gonna
I know what I'm doing.
Right, right.
I'm going to be Phil Collins. And, you know, I had thought I wanted to be that, but all that to say, it was a very human experience going through college and, you know, partying and, you know, just trying to find my way through this totally new world of being a performer. And then came out and an apartment opened up in New York. A friend of the family's called my mom and said, I live in Connecticut for, you know, 3 weeks out of the month. So I want to come back for once a month for a few days and sell my bead work. She's this woman who lives in Connecticut. She's like, I have an apartment. So I came in. I just moved down. It was obviously an opening. And the spirit was looking after me. So I try not to question too much when that happens. And so I found myself on 27th and Lexington in this big apartment bartending, which I, you know. And then just from there, I hung back. I didn't audition for anything for about 6 months. Just because I didn't know what I was doing. It was very, very scary, and it was like New York. I mean, New York.
Did you know people here?
Yeah. I knew some graduates. People from the conservatory. And a guy that went to my high school, Roosevelt, had gone through the conservatory as well, as did Chad Kimball. But this other friend, Charlie Marcus, had been on Broadway on A Chorus Line, the last cast of A Chorus Line. Mm-hmm. And he gave me my first professional job.
What was it?
It was A Chorus Line. He directed A Chorus Line up in Manchester, New Hampshire, at the Palace Theater. I played Mike.
Oh.
I'm watching Cisco Pitapan.
And I could do that.
I could do that.
Yes, you could.
And I learned the original choreography from him, mm-hmm. which led to auditioning for a national tour of A Chorus Line, non-equity. And I was on that for a little while, and I got a European tour, and boom, I was off. I just worked. And I kept auditioning, and I kept working. And I was a dancer. I was a male dancer. And I did a lot of ensemble work, and I busted my ass. I loved working.
Yes.
I loved working. And people saw it as competition, or people saw it as showing off. But I would always just tap, or I'd turn a handstand, or I just loved to do it. And when we worked, I worked hard, and I beat my body to death.
Yeah.
When I worked, you had to keep up with me. And I wasn't trying to maybe I was trying to show up the people around me. I didn't experience it as competition. I just worked and worked and worked.
Do you mind talking about the reaction that people felt threatened or whatever by you?
I don't have any experience of that because it was inside them.
No, but what you were saying, but you could see it. Didn't you just say?
I was self-involved. I mean, people talk about the competition. I tried to get rid of that as soon as I could. I tried to concentrate on, and my dad was really helpful. Believe it or not, my dad said, what if it was already decided? What if it was already decided when you went to an audition? What if it was already yours or not yours? And nothing you did could make it not yours if it was yours. And nothing you did could make it yours if it wasn't. What if it was done? What if you could just go in and work? And that really opened up my heart and my eyes. And I can't say I didn't compete with people, but I tried not to spend time worrying about, do they have my job?
Yeah, I hear your position very clearly. I thought you said that you experienced some other people as thinking that it was competitive somehow. And
I don't know. I guess
maybe I just misread.
No, I'm just trying to. I guess I was trying to parse through what it was that was driving me to work so hard.
Well, and so you know, because you brought up your dad, how did your parents feel about this as a career for you?
Horrified and overwhelmingly happy and excited for me. They didn't know anything about it. I remember when I told my mom,
horrified and overwhelmingly happy, isn't that what you said?
Oh, totally. They were so, so happy for me. They're so excited to see me flourish and be happy and to devote myself to the arts. I mean, they're hippies. They're definitely, I can tell a bird of a feather. They were so happy to watch me flourish and to find something that I love doing. I remember telling my mom I'm going to the Boston Conservatory and watching her just break into a sweat of like, we have no money, dude. We have no money.
Yeah.
How is this kid going to go to the Boston Conservatory? There's no way he's going to go to the East Coast. And bless her heart, we made it happen. I mean, you know, I went into debt and I took out loans, et cetera, et cetera. But it was,
Yes, you have given it everything, haven't you?
I think I have. And even more so these days, like I'm learning that I had more to give.
The same stuff, more of the same or different?
Just more clarity and less diffusing of my energy.
Yes.
I was chasing a lot of dragons, having a lot of fun, trying to be a lot of things to a lot of different people.
Some of that's age.
Definitely.
Because, among other things, well, I mean, I have a lot to say about that, but some of it's just physical, that you can't continue to do You just, I mean, generally
speaking,
the body doesn't. But
and then you realize you don't want to.
And then you don't want to, because you've been there, done that.
And there's so many other, there's so much to do other than scream this high and jump that high and land that hard. There's so much else to do. And
are we talking about subtlety now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Subtlety.
Yeah.
Subtleties, yeah. Gradations, variations.
Yes.
The whole spectrum that goes on.
Yes. It's not all so large.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, even before it comes out of you. There's so many things that happen that, you know, when you're young, you don't think about. You're just, you're thinking how it goes on.
I can do that.
Yeah, I can do that, exactly. Oh, hell yeah, I can do that.
Watch me now.
Watch me now. Totally.
Yeah. Okay, so I suspect, although I'm making this up, that some of what you're talking about is why straight plays might be more interesting to you now than before.
Mm.
Because they give you an opportunity to do something else, something more subtle, something more layered, something more...
Yeah. I mean, I think that part of why my career has been, why I've worked and I continue to work, is that I think I began as an actor. So I had that kind of... that's how I approached it, but... But yeah, definitely. Now that I'm realizing how fast I was moving and how you know I have a lot more to do in that arena.
I may also be wrong about this, but isn't there less work for dancers now than there used to be, or is that wrong?
No. I think you're wrong. I think.
Is it sort of coming back, or was there always?
This is huge right now.
Really?
This is such an amazing time when to be alive in the arts. We don't know how to talk about a renaissance. We're having the biggest renaissance in worldwide appreciation and co-mingling of style and co-creation. And the things that are going on worldwide are astounding. Tap has never been as big as it is right now.
Really?
Oh my God, there are thousands of Japanese kids coming here because Jimmy Slide kept going over to Japan. And it's just huge. I mean, tap, as far as pop culture, well, pop culture is pop culture. I'm not really a big Britney Spears fan. I'm not, pop music has only so much in it, but if you go on the internet, if you get connected to different communities and what music is doing, what art is doing, what dance is doing right now is insane. It's so beautiful. It's so multifaceted. It's so multimedia oriented. There's so many different
synthesis.
Disciplines coming together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, like the Cirque du Soleil and Broadway and concert venue and again, multimedia stuff. It's just... We are in a huge, huge renaissance, but we don't have the seven papers worldwide that talk about it that we did in the turn of the century, right? Way back when, art was talked about by the elite, which were these seven families, maybe. Let's just pretend there's seven of them. Now, art is talked about by everybody and appreciated by everybody worldwide. We don't have these tiny little channels for, the elite to say, this is good and his name is Picasso. And I appreciate him and you shall too. And, yes, any artist and every discipline has been transformed. The music industry is gone. The music industry is no longer at all what it used to be 10 years ago. The dance world is throwing artists just hand over fist between countries. People going and teaching and learning and the intermingling is just, it's extraordinary. There is more dancing happening in the world than ever before, I feel.
Wow.
Like.
Well, I got that wrong.
I really think there is.
I believe you. Who could know better than you?
Well, and it's my own experience.
Of course.
The funding is always an interesting thing as far as things being able to make it big and go, but we're also getting really savvy about how to reach out and how to find people who want to fund art and how to make that happen,
Really?
Yeah. I mean, the governments are so stingy as all get out.
Right.
Our government, you have to fight hand over fist. We're pathetic as far as our government's concerned. It's embarrassment. The rest of the world is really waking up. The rest of the world is learning how to philanthropize and get people to money so they can be supported. And you know, I see a lot of different, you know, organizations and different buildings being erected, different centers being devoted to different artists. I just watched the Pina Bausch film, right? And she has her whole school for her. And you know what, she was, I don't know, I'm waxing philosophical about it. And it's embarrassing because America, we still struggle to get money from our government that doesn't recognize that a society is based on...
No. And 'twas ever thus, though.
Right.
You know, I mean, Europe has a history of patronage for the arts. We don't have that.
We do have, however, ridiculously high price tags that you can make an obscene amount of money if you're an artist and you make it big.
Yes.
There's a correlation, and I hope everybody sees that, you know, you can make this much on Broadway. They don't make that much on the West End.
Right.
They don't expect to make that much on the West
No.
End. No, they can make a living on the West
Right.
End. And it's a part of the mystique of America, but it's also, it will keep going, right? Broadway will always be Broadway.
Yes, I think this is a larger thing. I think this is a philosophical base.
Probably it won't go on the table.
What?
Probably won't get into the thing.
Actually, I think some of it will. But I think it's a philosophy. I think it's a part of the American cultural philosophy. And I don't think it'll change. I think it's very damaging.
Mm.
You know, that... I told you at the beginning that I interview people who make their living or their life within art because so few people can make a living within art in our culture.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of people make their life of it. You know, they are in community theater. They, you know, they draw for themselves. They don't, you know, but they can't make a living because we don't support that here.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's a part of the American culture. I don't really understand it exactly.
I think it's based in greed, honestly.
Well, you know, you took the words out of my mouth. I might have said we're more materialistic. You know, that things matter more, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I want you to talk about what you're doing now, what you're in rehearsal for.
Oh, I'm helping a friend. I'm helping a friend who's choreographing a show at the Minetta Lane Theater called City Club.
Mm-hmm. So you're not in it?
No. I'm helping.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you're doing yourself now?
Well, I am working on a show. I'm going to do Bobby Child at Sacramento Music Circus this coming summer, August. I'm going to be playing Harold Hill at the Fifth Avenue in Seattle in 2013. Directly after that, the show that I have, that my company, the New York Song and Dance Company, NYSD Co., is we have a show that my friend Jeff Calhoun is directing, whom you have spoken with.
We're talking about Pulse?
What? About Pulse, exactly. So we are headed for Sarasota, and that's really exciting to me.
Tell me about it.
It is just a labor of love. It started a while back when I put together a bunch of numbers, just things I created throughout my career and numbers I danced in, and found a few numbers I really liked, and then added to it, and then have just been growing it, doing different performances.
How many people?
There's five on stage, and there's a band, great band, and we're entertainers, we're performers, we are the proverbial triple threats, you could kind of say. We like to think we can sing, dance, and act.
You like to think you can sing, dance, and act.
I love this.
It's so funny. I mean, you know, 10 minutes ago you were talking about your. The ego of being able to do everything and being it, and now you're all but blushing, and your voice has gone down, and you're holding your hands over your face. We like to think that we can
It's all an endeavor. It's all an endeavor, and you know, we're performers. We have we have people who sing, dance, and we act, and a lot of it is rhythm based, obviously from my background. Tap dancers, drumming, and just some great music, really just wonderful music that I like. And
it's not original.
Well, no. All the music is existing. It's already pre-existing music. But the choreography is original, and the takes on the numbers are original.
Of course, because Noah Racy is an original.
It's Noah Racy's pulse.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So it's been such a joy to be strangely at the center of this thing. I still feel it's weird that I started a company. But I'm sitting here and I'm talking to people who I admire the heck out of these people, and we're all working together in a room, and I made that happen. It's that bliss, or it made it happen. I can't even say I made it happen.
You threw a dart.
I'm throwing a dart. I threw a dart. Nicely done. I did. I threw a dart.
I know.
And I kept throwing it, and I keep saying yes, as a friend of mine and I like to say, I keep showing up and breathing, and, you know. As long as they keep asking me about it, let's see how long this thing goes. But that's one of the big developments that I'm looking at. And then there's just doing the do here in the city, which is you audition.
And you show up.
You do concerts, and you help friends, and you feed your cat, and you move along.
You have a cat?
I do have a cat. I have a great cat.
So do you have anything you haven't done that you want to do?
No, I've done it all.
No.
No, totally, everything.
Do you know who Jimmy Webb is?
Yeah.
He is famous for saying, you know, by the time I was 22, I did everything I had ever occurred to me that I would ever want to do, and I don't know what to do now.
Yeah, right? I have a lot to do. Well, I'm doing it as far as with this company and with acting.
Okay, but now what you're saying to me is, I have done and am doing everything I want to do, and that is what I want to continue to do.
Continuing doing it and growing and growing and growing. I want to do Shakespeare. I want to work on scripts. I want to do new shows. I'm developing a couple of new shows with. One with the Fifth Avenue Theater. They have a new works program, and we're writing a new story and using music existing.
So are you writing?
Writing, yes. And yeah, well, I write. I gesticulate. I do a lot of different things. Writing a new story with that, creating a new. I kind of have a screenplay or two in my computer that is it's just crazy. Pedro Almodovar is the only person I want to touch any of my things because it's nuts and it's me and it's like, but I have a lot of things I would love to share.
So some of the boy with the energy, with the passion, with the fireworks.
Oh yeah, he's
still
never
there.
Went away.
Never went away.
I try to couch him as best I can so he doesn't make a complete ass of me, but. Yeah, no, he's definitely alive and well.
How could he possibly make an ass of you?
Oh, yeah. Well, you'd be amazed.
Yes, I would.
He says what he wants to and has too much energy. You know, as a kid, you have to breathe and remember that there's a time for each thing, and a part of being an adult is trusting that it's going
to
flow.
It'll come back to you.
And the time will be right. It'll be right to have happen. And the Broadway shows I've gotten, and when things happen, it's not a struggle.
No, I know.
And that's the big myth, is that this is a hard business, and oh, it's so competitive, and all these things. And yeah, if you want it to be, if you let it be, it's really hard. But life, it's all life. And life is really hard if you butt up against it and you keep out of the flow and you buck, everything about how your life is moving through you, that's exactly the same game. So the jobs that I've gotten made sense. It was right. It wasn't a struggle in the audition. It made sense when I was cast. I felt good. Sometimes I wasn't sure if I would get it or not, but I know, yeah, okay, right.
Well, and I'm also thinking that it happened for you. You know, your teacher said, do this. You threw the dart. You got it. You got out. Then, was it what? I want to say Charlie Marcus.
Nice. Very good. Yeah.
Got you a job, and that
right.
Got you a job, and got you a job. I mean, it was, right? It was...
Keep showing up and breathing.
Or it was meant to be.
Here, here. Yeah, I mean...
I hear a lot of those stories.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Do you know who Bill Hayes is?
Yeah.
Bill Hayes fought in World War II, and when he got out of the war, he went to college, had no idea what he wanted to be, had no plan, nothing. Huh. He's graduating from college, was older than everybody because he'd come back as a, you know, from the war.
Huh.
And he was married and he had a kid, so he had to get a job and he didn't know what he was going to do. And his family was very musical. They all sang, they read music, and they played instruments and stuff. But he had a younger brother named William. And William had written to the national tour of Carousel, which was going to come to where they were. I think it was Chicago, but I'm not positive. And he wrote, you know, I'm a tenor, and if you need a tenor when you are kind of come to Chicago, let me know. And the tour manager had written to him saying, yes, we need a tenor, and we're going to be there at such and such a date, and this is the audition. Well, day came for the audition. Will was sick. So Bill changed the name on the audition thing and went down and sang.
That's awesome.
And
that's
he great. Never was out of work after that, right?
Because he's supposed to sing.
He was supposed to, that's right. Yeah. Right. And I mean, I hear these stories all the time. So I have great, I don't know,
trust.
What, right, that's the word exactly. I couldn't find it, but yes.
And that trust is what you sit on and what they smell on you when you come in the room.
Yeah, right.
You trust that it's not about this audition.
No, that's right.
You're there sharing what you do.
Right. If this is yours, it'll be yours. That's
yeah,
right. It's what your father said.
It really
it's
is.
So brilliant. I've never heard anybody say it quite like that.
Well, it's kind of, you know, nobody likes to say, well, everything's predecided, predetermined. It's not that.
It's not that, no.
It's trusting in the spirit.
Yes, well, in the rightness of things.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's just a mentality.
Yes.
And you find a lot of people, you know, a lot of people in this city, when I moved here, I realized a lot of people are, you know, they don't trust in the rightness of things. They trust in that life is hard, you struggle some more, then you die. And,
yeah.
You know, that it's dog eat dog. And there's always an example, an excuse, and a reason to take that mindset. And that's what Gandhi didn't. Every day he chose not to. And that's what, you know, King did as best he could. Not take that mindset. Not take, you know, like, this is, you're right, you're right, it just sucks.
It sucks,
die.
Right. You know,
so what's the point? So it's all slogging uphill.
And actually, you know, I mean, I'm sure that I'm not telling you anything you don't know. If you have that mindset, that is what it is.
I'm a big believer in that.
You know.
Creation.
Right.
You are a co-creator. Here.
Exactly. Exactly.
Big time.
Right. Okay. All right. So then I ask, having given a life, and this began when you were three, for having given a life to the art of rhythm, of communication, of storytelling, of performing, is there anything you haven't said that you would like to say about what that's like?
It's as good as you might think it is at times. It's so amazing. It is so freaking awesome. It makes you want to jump up and down in your bed. It is insanely awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, it's kid in a candy store good. So it's better than words can talk about.
That's a good place to stop.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Noah.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Okay, how many of us can say that we are living a life that makes us want to jump up and down in our bed? That is better than words can say. How many of us can say that we are living the life we are meant to live? Well, it's my hope that every single one of us is moving in that direction, even if we're not yet there. And listening to Noah, I hope that you hear that it's possible. It's possible to be in love with your life, to be who you are. That's what it takes to be in love with your life, being who you are. So, I hope, as always, actually, with every interview that I do, that you hear the possibilities. And that it is encouraging you to look into yourself and see, is there something about me? Not necessarily a talent, but a way of being, a philosophy, an idea, a behavior, an activity, anything that I hide, that I may know that I have or am or want to be, but have been afraid to throw the darts. And I hope that this interview has helped you to think about that. You don't have to rush out and do it. Just think about it. Allow yourself to consider the possibility that there's a more joyful life waiting for you. Well, all right. We're rapidly running out of time for this show, but I didn't want to cut any more of that interview that I had to. So now it is time for me to thank, yet again, as always, the indomitable Josh Hackney, who is responsible for everything that goes right for me in terms of computers or digital or recording or any of that stuff, electronics, everything. And as I like to say, everyone should have a Josh Hackney. And in fact, you could have Josh Hackney if you want. Just go up on my website, thelinshow.com, thelinnesshow, thelinshow.com. And click on email me and say, I want Josh, and I'll get him for you. Or ask me any kinds of questions that you might want to, and I will answer them. And so now, as always, I hope that you got something from this show that is a benefit to you. Something that amused you, made you laugh, made you think, made you wonder, taught you something you didn't know, stimulated your imagination. Something that will bring you back. Because, as always, I will be here next week, same time, same station. And as always, I sure hope you will be, too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boy. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. On ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes, every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight, no, no. We will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep. singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may have gotten limper, but I won't.